You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Hey guys, Chris here. Here's a shout out to all our subscribers. You're what keeps OneOfUs.net up and running. And we've got so much coming for you, including more video versions of the reviews and shows, commentaries, and, because it seems like a lot of you may not always check the front page, contests all the time for subscribers to win big prizes. Like right now, we've got the complete Twilight Zone on Blu-ray, up to win for one lucky Time Lord or above subscriber. And I'm doing this. I'm extending the contest date till the second week of February. More time to enter, more time to win, and new contests will be going live next week. Keep your eye on the front page at OneOfUs.net for regular new chances for us to say thank you to the subscribers who keep us running. Movie, A Cure for Insomnia. No, wellness. Sorry, I'm still slap happy. I'm Chris.
Patience.
Richard.
Bo.
Carlos.
Yeah, this is, I gotta say, I was really anticipating this film because I love Gore Verbinski's take on The Ring. I thought it was actually one of the best remakes of a movie maybe ever. It's actually better than the original Japanese film.
Also, the trailer for this did promise you an awful lot of eels.
Yeah, and which it delivered on.
Really?
I think it delivered on some eels, but if this was a shorter film and kept the number of eels, it would have a decent eel-to-moment ratio.
This was Don't Fear the Reaper for eels if you substitute them for cowbell. Because every fucking scene they did, obviously Gore Verbinski or somebody else said, you know what would make this creepier? Eels.
More eels. Throw in more eels.
I could have done with more eels. I could have eel lights.
Thin on eels. Well, that's because you come from a place where they... That's because you come from a place where people consider them appetizing.
What is wrong with you? Eel pie is...
Yes. Let's all dig into some nice lamprey pie.
Eel is actually pretty tasty, to be fair. But,
I knew like an onion.
This is not one of those... If this had been a Cronenberg film, they sure would have torn into an eel at some point, and then it probably would have had a little baby eels that would grow.
Yeah, and this one you just get like a picture of a dissection.
But it's true. Rich is like, oh, there's not enough eels. Like, well, that's only because this movie was 10 hours long. So even though for a normal film, this would have been eels in every scene.
Yes.
And for this, it was like maybe 1% of the film.
I think we went a whole hour without seeing an eel.
That's too long for this movie. In fact, there are a lot of things could be described as too long for this movie.
Although Dane DeHaan does look very vaguely eel-esque in this movie because he's particularly pallid and sweaty here, and as the film goes on and he starts to look worse and worse, he actually begins transforming into Nick Kroll by about halfway.
Well, that's the thing. It's like they're trying to make a lot of this takes place in a sanitarium, and they're trying to put forward these people are in bad shape because they're all pasty white, and it's just like, well, when your lead is Dayton, you're really shit out of luck because nobody's going to look pale and unhealthy next to that guy.
There's that scene where he goes, you're looking kind of pale, and I wanted to yell,
how could you tell?
Have you met him?
He's just awake.
The man's a tube of Crest toothpaste, for Christ's sake.
All right, so the story is Dane DeHaan plays...
Story?
Yeah, such as it is.
There's a lot of it.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Despite the trailers looking like this is a period piece, it is not. It's modern day. He's an ambitious young executive working at a big, I guess, law firm? Stock firm?
No, it's a finance company.
Finance company. Yeah. And basically he gets caught doing something he shouldn't have been doing, but they're like, well, rather than just fire you, we actually need you to do something for us. See, one of the main stockholders of this company, Mr. Pembroke, I believe was his name.
Yes. Was that actor the guy who played the mayor in Buffy? He looks similar.
Yeah, I think it was.
I think it was.
He's just gotten so much older.
Yeah. And he's a giant eel. I'm just saying.
He went to this weird, like, spa out in the, I guess, Switzerland? Is that where they're Germany?
But they're in the Swiss Alps. They're at the very, very foot of where the Swiss Alps begin. It's this very storybook-looking place.
Yeah.
To the extent extent that when they're driving through the town and they're like, oh, you're going up to the sanitarium, and then they give this, like, you know, oh, and here's Castle Frankenstein on the top of the Alps.
I was waiting for, like, wolves with red eyes to run by the car.
I was waiting for the
werewolves.
I was waiting for the inexplicably Mexican, the inexplicably Spanish driver to start saying,
hey,
like,
you're very cosmopolitan. Now that we've got the EU, people travel. I have less of an issue with that.
Lupo aquí.
On the list of things I issue with about this film, the fact there's a Spaniard in what is either Germany, Austria, Switzerland, or Northern Italy, that's the least of my problems.
True. Well, anyway, so, like, he wrote us this weird cryptic letter about, I'm not coming back, and humanity is sick.
Yes.
And I'm sick, too, which is why I'm staying at the spa. So, like, you need to go to the spa and get him back at all costs. And he gets there, he meets the guy who runs the place, Jason Isaacs, who right off the bat, you're like, evil
and terrible at Middle European accents.
Terrible Middle European accents.
Yeah, he pretty much, like, he gives you a little German lilt for, like, the first two scenes he's in, and then it's like, nope, fucking I'm English again.
But like, Dane DeHaan gets injured, breaks his leg, wakes up in the place, and they're like, okay, well, you can't leave now. You gotta stay. Which they always find another excuse. There's always another reason. Like, you can't get cell phone service there, so we can't call back. Like, no, we called your people. It's going to be fine.
It doesn't help the fact that even though they're behaving shady as fuck through the whole thing, Dana's always like, well, I'm going to bring this to the attention of the authorities at this hospital. And it's like, no, they're the bad guys. You haven't figured this out yet.
It does take it.
You should just try to escape.
It is one of those horror movies where you're just like the main character constantly like, what are you, an idiot? Everyone is evil.
Yeah.
He literally had three opportunities to escape, and he kept going back.
If nothing else, it's just like, you know, call an Uber and go to fucking Geneva, dude. Do something.
Yeah, so most of this movie, the bulk of it, is him wandering around this admittedly beautiful old house, although who knows how much of it was actually set inside the house.
Yeah, I believe it's all set at the Overlook Hotel.
And slowly going deeper into the bowels of the place on his search to try and find out what's the deal with this guy Pemberton. I've got to find a way to get him out of here. And then realizing, hey, there's a lot of fucking eels around this place.
And the world's most pallid, skinny woman.
Yes.
Who spends most of... Mia Goth. I really wish I wasn't making that up.
Yeah. Best name ever.
Her name really is Mia Goth as Hannah, who has an even less convincing and less well-kept Middle European accent than Jason Isaacs, who spends their first few appearances just kind of wandering along walls and looking sad and pale.
Yeah.
And
Mia
eel-like.
Goth.
Yeah.
Goth.
That's not even the character's name. That's the actress's name. You know what the best thing? Her middle name is Gypsy. I wish I was making this up.
Her name is Mia Gypsy Goth?
And she's betrothed to Shia LaBeouf.
Is it Marilyn Manson, her dad?
I put her there.
Oh, my God.
Betrothed to Shia LaBeouf.
I mean, like... to me, I'm watching this thing, and by the time a normal movie would have been over, I'm like, is something going to fucking happen in this movie yet? What is going on? It's just, there's so much aimless wandering from scene to scene, and lots of red herrings that lead nowhere.
Those are red herrings.
They're red eels.
They're not even particularly good red herrings, because the plot's completely predictable about good 45 minutes.
Well, that's the thing is, they throw in so much of those red herrings to throw you off the fact that you knew exactly what was going on in the first 20 minutes of the film.
They keep layering it, and you're just like, I mean, the main interest for me that got me through this movie is just like, what the fuck are they going to do to sum all this shit up?
Yeah. How does all this piece together? And the answer is only kind of.
Only kind
of. Yeah, it sort of pieces together.
One of the major points of the thing, like, just makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, let's spend 2 hours wandering around, and then we're going to spend like 20 minutes on the important part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Define important.
Yeah.
Well, the secret of the eels.
Well, the secret of the eels. That
sounds which would be a much better film.
That's the sequel. When they get a cure for wellness to the secret of the eels. It's like, we already found out that secret and it was stupid.
Let's give this the credit that it does deserve.
It's a beautiful movie.
Gore Verbinski is a great art director.
Yeah.
And this is clearly him after the Lone Ranger going, screw you guys, I'm going to do what I want with, you know, a much, much smaller budget. This is closest in a lot of ways to his Ring remake. stylistically. Mm-hmm. He even drops a little bit of reference in the, with a deer crashing through a windscreen, which is like, oh, we get where you're going with
there's
it.
There's a lot of, like...
That was misleading.
This thing is really, like, I think it's stylistically choppy because, yeah, you get these very beautiful scenes that are, you know, Kubrickian. They're so stylish. And then all of a sudden, they'll be like, and then there's this classic gothic horror thing that we're going to throw in that just rings this completely false note and makes all the stylistic choices go right out the window.
The thing is, it's not gothic horror, it's gothic melodrama.
Yeah,
this is a gothic romance, which only really becomes clear in the 18th act.
Yeah.
and at that point, when it finally pulls all its tricks out and lays them on the table, it's a little squalid.
Yeah.
It actually feels, when you have one of the big reveals, unfortunate term there, for what happens, you're kind of like, no, this is just creepy now, and not creepy in a kind of big gothic way, just creepy in a, we really wish you hadn't gone that pathway.
Honestly, like that whole 18th act, if you will, the movie suddenly goes 100%, we want to be an even more grotesque version of Corman doing Poe, period. But even the non-Poe films he was doing at the same time, like the Abominable Dr. Fives and stuff like that, it all has that really campy, but we love Poe. It was Corman, wasn't it?
Abominable Dr. Fives? No, that was Vincent Price. It was not Corman.
I thought
Corman.
He produced that.
I don't think so. But
if only there was a way to find out.
To the interwebs.
Only there was a way to find out.
Yes, let's pause while we find out.
But it's just so silly.
And
the points when it tries to be more grotesque than anything from that period, it so took me out of it. Like a smack in the face.
Yeah, it just ended up being so unnecessary. Some of the more, I guess, uncomfortable moments.
It's like,
it just seemed like, that isn't, why?
It's like you're reading, like, you know, even a Michael Crichton novel, and then all of a sudden they're like, no, we're kidding, we're just kidding, it's an Edgar Allan Poe story. Wait, I was trying to put things together in that, and then you came up here, and now I'm in a castle.
And then we're going to pull some saw on your mouth.
And then you said as well, so there's Tarsem Singh elements in here as well.
When you talked about lack of stylistic cohesion,
yeah.
If you'd have given this script to Singh, it at least would have felt of a whole. This never really does. And there's odd moments which really do stick with you. There's a great point where he's wandering through these beautifully laid out... tiled steam room. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful shot. The whole sequence is exquisitely laid out. But who cares by the time you've done that 15 times? Yes. I think this is a film that really does suffer from...
It was disjointed.
Because it's so long, you feel how disjointed it is. You can really feel that there's no rhythm or rhyme or internal logic.
When we say this could easily and should have cut an hour, that's because... those logical jumps and those problems would feel much less troublesome if it was just moving quickly.
Yeah.
But if that happened, you would not believe that he wouldn't start freaking out in the first 30 or 30 minutes and just run. You know, go like, fuck this place and everyone in it. But yeah, like, when you finally get to the ending, it just feels so... It's like the movie is so in love with itself the whole time, and then at the end, it's so campy and goofy.
It's dumb.
And then you're like sitting to yourself going, this is exactly what I thought it was going to be in the beginning. What was all that other nonsense about?
Five says Samuel Z. Arkoff. It wasn't Corman.
Oh, fair enough.
It's in the box set.
Don't trifle with me.
You're thinking it because it was in the...
The Vincent Price box set. Yeah.
Because it was an API
Indeed.
Release as well. So
fair enough.
I wish I'd watched that instead.
Seriously. That was a lot more fun.
That's because that is actually a great movie.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Yes, and in that one, they just would have used the stock footage from Gone with the Wind for the burning ceiling.
Well, let's just go to final thoughts here. Carlos, why don't you lead us off?
I thought they were going to accidentally find Keanu Reeves wandering through the castle, trying to find his way out of that Dracula's castle. So, I'm going to say 52 out of 127 burning eels.
Nice. Beau?
Yeah, I think a lot of this problem is the kind of you alluded to is that it never really doubts itself, and that's a flaw because there are a lot of times where somebody should have taken a step back and go like, is this meshing? Because I don't feel like it's meshing. And so what you end up is getting kind of this horror movie by collage with, you know, five or six different elements that, you know, that it's
like making a soup with you know, stuff that doesn't taste good together. You know, it's just like, I don't want ketchup on my ice cream sundae.
What?
It's
delicious.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody loves cheese on their pancakes.
They eat that in England, right?
Nom, nom, nom.
Well, eel pancakes.
Yeah. So, yeah, and although I will admit that this movie kept me engrossed because, once again, I was just kind of like, well, what the fuck is happening here? By the time that it comes to the payoff, and I use that term extremely loosely, there's just no satisfaction at all. You're just kind of like, all right, well, I guess we got here. That's a shame. It shouldn't have taken 2.5 hours to do this. I'm not going to mince anything about it. I give it 4 eels.
Fair enough. Richard?
God bless Gore Verbinski for trying to do something different. I mean, this is a man who could coast within the studio system quite easily and probably just make Pirates of the Caribbean movies until the end of time. He did try and do something, you know, erratic and off the wall, but, you know, I probably watched 30 films that tried to do something similar to this, and they do it on less money, with far less experience and far fewer resources, and at least they're wacky and short enough to get away with it. This just feels like a very talented director going, screw you guys, I can do whatever I want. It's like, no, you can't do whatever you want. You do at some point have to work out, does this work? And he never does. Honestly, save your money on a ticket and go buy a copy of a film called Horsehead, which came out through Artsploitation a couple of years ago. Equally insane, much better. Give this, you know, 4 burning cultists out of 10.
Nice.
Patience?
I really like what Beau said about it being a collage. It rings really, really true. It's a mishmash. The movie's predictable early on. Lots of unnecessary moments. But I do like how it was a beautiful movie. It was there was a lot of, like, beautifully grotesque moments that I appreciated. So visually, I liked it. Plot-wise, it just wasn't there. I give it a dozen.
So it is a Tarsem Singh movie.
Yeah. I give it a dozen old lady titties out of 30.
There were a lot of old lady titties.
See, there's the Shining homage. Yeah.
Flat man ass as well.
True. Yeah, we must be equal always. I feel about this in maybe not, definitely not with as much disdain, but in for a lot of the same problems I had with Crimson Peaks. They're both movies that are trying to capture a earlier style of horror film, and somehow through trying to update it with modern techniques and modern sensibilities and throwing in too much camp, it just kind of becomes unwatchable, you know? At least for me. I don't know. I know some people like Crimson Peaks. I was famously not one of them. Yeah. Horrible movie!
So wrong.
Anyway, there's... It just, the biggest issue here is just, it just goes on so fucking long. I couldn't believe how long this felt it was. I mean, when it was finally looked like it was heading into the home stretch, I swear to God, I almost cheered. I was like, oh, wait, I think this is really the beginning of the 18th act.
Thank God. There was a person asleep in our row.
I believe it. I'm sure there's more than one person asleep in that theater.
It was Martin.
He's been known to do that. He has little patience for long, tedious affairs. I mean, Dane DeHaan is good like he always is, but he's also miscast here, I thought. Like, kind of,
I do, too. Yeah. He suffers from a lot of the problems that Leonardo DiCaprio, I had with Leonardo DiCaprio, in that it's like, I don't believe you as this possessing, you know, alpha male, financial, you know. Yeah, it's just like, if you've met the people that work on Wall Street, they're not like, they don't look like that. They're frat boy douchebags.
Yeah.
That's what they look like. And that is one thing I will say positive about this movie. The idea of taking a rich, horrible capitalist and sucking their essence out to make an eternal life elixir, that's awesome. Go for it.
Yeah, I kind of think that's our solution.
Yeah.
We found the answer.
He'll save the world.
Call the Democrats.
I know who we can sign up first.
Yeah, it's a real big mess. And even like the inventive imagery, when you watch the trailer, you're like, wow, this looks like a super inventive film.
The trailer's lying.
But then in the context of everything, you're like, that really wasn't all that creative. Visually interesting, but in terms of like what's happening in the story, That's kind of banal, actually.
Just another barrel of eels.
And they just keep, hitting the same things over and over again. There's so many, oh god, it's eels, that's scary. I was like, I don't find eels particularly scary.
That's the big thing. It's just a fucking eel, dude. I mean, if they were like moray eels with huge fangs, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, they can walk.
They can what?
Walk.
They can walk?
Yep.
That doesn't scare me either.
You ever seen an eel suddenly decide to cross a road? That shit's scary.
Okay.
Should have happened here.
It should have been a giant eel that crashed into the car.
That would have been great if it, you know, you found out that in the broken leg cast it was completely filled
with
eels.
But there are a few moments here that I got to hand it to whoever was like, we got to give a couple scenes in here. They're going to make every person in this audience start screaming and averting their eyes.
There's a few dental-related moments here.
Or they went just Dane DeHaan's face in general.
In general, especially in the last shot, like, why are you making that face right now?
It's so creepy.
Now, there's some dental horror in here that is as rough as anything I've ever seen. I cringed, and I rarely cringed. But, you know, aside from some neat visual stuff, some in general beautiful cinematography, I felt this was really kind of a train wreck, really, of a movie. I'm going to give it 3 out of 10 uncomfortable moments with gums being stretched farther than we should ever see on camera.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go floss, like, right now. I'm serious.